support from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Happy Friday, everyone. I'm Bill Price. Cuomo cover-up.
The governor, just to do a service to New York State, should resign.
That is the big story this Friday. Republicans and now even some Democrats calling on New York Governor Andrew Cuomo to step down after the New York Post reported that one of his aides admitted to withholding data on nursing home deaths.
This is the most damning because someone admitted it and someone reported it, and it looks like they covered it up the whole time.
Fox News meteorologist Janice Dean lost both of her in-laws to COVID-19 after they were placed in a nursing home instead of a hospital when the pandemic began last March.
And the fact that they had a closed-door meeting with Democratic lawmakers to apologize to them instead of the people who don't have their loved ones today is just icing on the cake. Today is a first step into justice for my in-laws.
Secretary to the governor, Melissa DeRosa, made the comments about the higher death totals during a video call with state Democratic leaders. Today, DeRosa trying to defend those comments. She says the administration acted out of fear that the true numbers would be used against them by federal prosecutors. New York Congresswoman Claudia Tenney says Andrew Cuomo needs to do the right thing and step down.
He really needs to be replaced. This is actually just more typical behavior from Andrew Cuomo. He's been a lawless, terrible governor, just exerting his power. It's been an abuse of power for the last 10 or 11 years he's served as our governor.
Tenney says if Governor Cuomo can get away with this, there is no such thing as justice in America. Here was the governor back on January 29th talking about the state's nursing home deaths.
Look, whether a person died in a hospital or died in a nursing home, it's the people died. We're below the national average in number of deaths in nursing homes. But who cares? They died.
That comment set off a lot of fireworks. Now the calls for Cuomo to step down are growing louder by the hour. State Senator Tom O'Mara says this governor lied about the health care crisis.
The CDC guidelines did not require COVID-positive patients to be sent into nursing homes. You know, we need to know why the governor deviated from CDC guidance on this. He claims to be following it. It's clear from reading of the CDC guidelines he did not follow it.
O'Mara says it's crystal clear that the governor of New York was involved in a massive and unconscionable cover-up. More on our top story later in the broadcast. The defense takes the floor. That is the other big story at noon.
Here we go. It's Trump's turn now.
Donald Trump's legal team will try and make their case that the 45th president did not incite an insurrection last month. Fox News reporter Griff Jenkins is on Capitol Hill.
The defense kicks off at noon, and they're expected to only spend one day making their case. Then this will head into the weekend when we find out if any witnesses will be called before senators get their four-hour opportunity to ask questions. After that, lawyers make their closing arguments, and we head for that historic vote.
Griff Jenkins reporting that vote expected next week. It's going to take 67 senators to convict the former president. Most pundits say that's not going to happen. The CDC out with new guidelines today on the reopening of schools that have been shut down during the pandemic. Under the game plan, schools will fall into four color-coded categories. Correspondent Nancy Cordes.
Would reopen with full in-person learning in the schools with low community spread. Those would be the blue and yellow zones. Schools in the orange zone, where transmission rates are higher, would be recommended for hybrid or reduced attendance. Now, this same guidance goes for schools in the red zone if they regularly test staff and students.
Correspondent Nancy Cordes. President Biden, meantime, says the U.S. has just signed contracts for an additional 200 million doses of the COVID vaccine.
We're now on track to have enough supply for 300 million Americans by the end of July.
Under the CDC guidelines out today, teachers aren't required to get a vaccine before heading back to the classroom. The Biden administration now denying reports that it was considering domestic travel restrictions because of the pandemic. That report claimed the president was planning on prohibiting travel to places like Florida and California because of new strains of COVID-19.
Restricting the right of Americans to travel freely throughout our country while allowing illegal aliens to pour across the southern border unmolested would be a ridiculous but very damaging farce.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
So we will oppose it 100%. It would not be based in science. It would purely be a political attack against the people of Florida.
DeSantis says the domestic travel restrictions would be unconstitutional, unwise, and unjust. There is dangerous weather in much of the country today.
I advise everyone to stay home. It's not safe at all.
A tow truck driver in Oregon, where another round of snowy weather expected this weekend, in North Texas, temps far below normal.
Dangerous wind chills already in place that get even worse into next week.
Icy roads causing that deadly pileup of more than 130 vehicles on an interstate in Fort Worth yesterday. Survivors say they'll never forget it.
I hear a car hit the barrier and it made me jump. And then another car hit that car. And then a semi-truck, you can hear people screaming. And then a second later, their screams get muffled by another crash.
Six people were killed. Now there are accusations that the road wasn't properly treated before yesterday's big ice storm. State Representative Ramon Romero Jr.
When truckers tell our first responders, I could not stop. From the moment there was no braking, there could not have been any de-icing procedures on that roadway.
Romero wants an investigation into the incident. A disturbing new report out today on a world-famous preacher who died last spring. Family Life's Paul Price.
Yeah, Bill, Christianity Today reports that a four-month investigation has found the late evangelist Ravi Zacharias leveraged his reputation as a world-famous Christian apologist to abuse massage therapists in the U.S. and abroad. That abuse happened over more than a decade while the ministry, led by family members and loyal allies, failed to hold him accountable. A 12-page report released yesterday by Ravi Zacharias International Ministries confirms the abuse at day spas that he owned in Atlanta and uncovers evidence of sexual abuse in Thailand, India, and Malaysia. Zacharias died of cancer last May. His daughter now runs the ministry. Bob Price, Family Life News.
Okay, Bobby, thanks for that. Still to come this Friday, Cuomo cover-up in New York, overdose deaths in Pennsylvania, and Congressman Reed could be running for governor.
Well, good afternoon. We're heading into the weekend, and winter weather is going to stick around. Cold air and some snow in the offing. Forecast details are coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
Alrighty, Kevin Williams checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Friday, February 12th. Once again, our top story this Friday, the Cuomo cover-up. The New York Post reporting that a top aide to the governor told state Democratic leaders during a video call that the state withheld the number of nursing home deaths during the pandemic. Secretary to the governor, Melissa DeRosa, said the administration acted out of fear that the true numbers would be used against them by federal prosecutors. Democratic State Senator Rachel May was on that video call.
I don't want to say they've been being dishonest necessarily, but they've been being cagey in a way that doesn't inspire confidence. And I think in a public health emergency, we should have confidence in our public health officials.
Senate Minority Leader Rob Ort says if the governor was involved in holding back that information, he should be removed from office. Jelsey Randazzo Marchese lost her grandmother to COVID after she was placed in a nursing home in Rochester instead of in a hospital.
It matters because each death that's unaccounted for is someone's family member that's not getting justice or recognition. And they're more than numbers. They're human beings.
A new report by the Associated Press now shows over 9,000 recovering coronavirus patients in the state were released from hospitals and put into nursing homes at the start of the pandemic nearly a year ago. State Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay.
This is not a Democratic or Republican issue. This is about holding people accountable and putting in place policies so this tragedy won't happen ever again.
Over 15,000 nursing home patients died from COVID in New York State. That's up from the 8,500 that was first reported by the Cuomo administration. New York Congressman Tom Reed considering a challenge to Governor Cuomo next year.
We're being asked to look at that race, and I'll be honest with you, we are. We're praying on it. We're deliberating with other folks.
Reed co-chairs the bipartisan Problem Solvers Caucus and says his ability to work across the aisle makes him qualified to take on the three-term Democrat.
One-party rule and his kind of bullying attitude of governing has to come to an end. It's really destroying the future of the state.
Reed's been in Congress for over a decade. Before that, he was mayor of Corning. We need to do better. That's what Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf is saying about the state's COVID-19 vaccination effort. The governor says the Keystone State has one of the oldest populations in the country, and that's a problem, especially in a pandemic.
The number of people in that category is over 4 million, and that would be, if it were a separate state, would be sort of in the middle of the pack, would be larger than many states in the United States. Those are some of the challenges, among the challenges we face, but there are no excuses. We still need to make better progress. We need to do better.
Nearly 1.5 million Pennsylvanians have received the vaccine so far. The state, one of the worst in the country right now when it comes to administering the shot. State health officials in Pennsylvania say the pandemic is causing a spike in drug use all across the Commonwealth. Officials say 13 drug overdose deaths are taking place every single day in the Keystone State, and much of the blame is because of the pandemic. Felony assault charges against the two Buffalo police officers who pushed a 75-year-old Black Lives Matter protester to the ground last summer have been dismissed by a grand jury. Erie County District Attorney John Flynn says he has no regrets about charging those two officers.
Still to this day, I'll stand by the fact that charges should have been filed, and there was probable cause at that time to charge that offense, and I stand by that. I made no apologies for it, and if I had to go back over again, I'd do the same thing.
The officers Aaron Torgalski and Robert McCabe were seen in a video pushing Martin Gugino to the ground. Gugino hit his head on the sidewalk and suffered a concussion. The two officers remain on paid leave in Buffalo pending the outcome of an internal investigation. Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman defending his decision to pull a gun on an unarmed Black man. The incident taking place in 2014 when Fetterman was the mayor of Braddock, PA. The U.S. Senate candidate used a shotgun to stop and detain a Black jogger after he heard gunshots in his neighborhood. The 28-year-old Black man turned out to be an innocent victim of racial profiling. Fetterman later called for increased police training to prevent the same kind of racial profiling that he himself engaged in. The Pennsylvania Game Commission investigating the shooting death of a bald eagle in Berks County.
To think that somebody would be stupid enough to shoot a bird just as it flies by, just so that they can shoot something. It is senseless.
The investigators say the bald eagle was dumped in a state game lands parking lot in the town of Tilden late last month. Former Game Commission Eagle Watcher Karen Lippe.
The life of anything is precious to me, but the eagles hold in our hearts a higher place because it is a symbol of our country.
The officials say the eagle was killed during peak nesting season for the species. Let's hand it over to Sonny. We call it your two-minute drill.
Yeah, let's start down under. And Melbourne, Australia is in a coronavirus lockdown. What does that mean for the Australian Open?
There's no crowds. These people are essentially at their workplace. And the minimum number of staff for it to be run safely.
Grand Slam Tennis Tournament, which runs through February 21st, will continue without fans for at least 5 days. Plenty of action as Serena Williams overcame two set points to beat Anastasia Potapova to advance to the fourth round. Naomi Osaka, Garbine Muguruza, French Open champion Iga Swiatek, and number two seed Simona Halep also move on. Buffalo's Jessica Pegula plays tonight. Men's number one seed Novak Djokovic needed to rally to win in five sets. Dominic Thiem, Alex Auger, and Milos Raonic also advance. The Ivy League Council of Presidents has approved the opportunity for current senior student athletes to play an additional season as graduate students next season. Brown head coach Mike Martin.
Still a lot of unanswered questions. How will directly impact students with
grad school admissions and financial aid and deadlines. So, but I do applaud them that they're putting the student athletes at the forefront.
There are more than 20 Ivy League men's basketball players currently in the NCAA transfer portal. In women's college basketball, Pitt falls to Wake Forest 64-61. Florida State shocks Syracuse 67-52. In the NBA, former Syracuse star Carmelo Anthony poured in 17 points in the fourth quarter. The Trailblazers beat the 76ers 118-114.
I got hot in the fourth quarter and made some shots. We won the game. We knew how important this game was for us.
Elsewhere, the Celtics beat the Raptors 120-106. On the ice, Sidney Crosby scored the only goal in the shootout. The Pens beat the Islanders 4-3 in New York. Evgeny Malkin tied the game at 3 for Pittsburgh. With just 18 seconds left in regulation, Pens head coach Mike Sullivan.
It's huge. It's a huge goal for us. I think we needed a win for our confidence.
The Sabres and Flyers off due to COVID protocol. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphier.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Friday edition of the Noon Report, the boys are back. Capital Connection on the way, plus Honest Abe, made entirely of snow.
Animals are incredible, especially the octopus, but it can never fill the God-shaped hole that's in all of our hearts. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. The new Netflix film, My Octopus Teacher, is kind of hard to categorize. It's not exactly a nature documentary, nor is it strictly narrative storytelling, and the title's strange enough by itself. Still, this film, by a documentary filmmaker named Craig Foster, has garnered glowing reviews and is a popular topic across social media. The movie follows Foster, who, in the midst of a personal crisis, decides to snorkel in the kelp forest near his South African home every day for a year. Now, I doubt I was the only one whose first thought was, wow, that must be nice to have a breathtaking coastal home where personal therapy takes the form of snorkeling. And that's just the first thing that makes the show's popularity a little puzzling, especially in this culture that analyzes all problems, every political issue, and even the identity and value of individual people in terms of who has privilege and who doesn't. Still, though it's difficult to see My Octopus Teacher without noting that cultural tension, it's also a little refreshing to see a person who has clear privilege but chooses not to dwell on it. But to be clear, My Octopus Teacher is not a movie about privilege. It's about, wait for it, an octopus. See, Foster first comes across this animal in the very early days of his year of snorkeling, and he's mesmerized. Octopi, that's the plural of octopus for the record, are incredible and, of course, strange. They have this ability to go from something that seems solid to something that becomes almost liquid in just a matter of seconds. The thousands of suction cups on the outside of their bodies are kind of like a second brain. In fact, two-thirds of their cognition happen here, according to scientists. Throughout the film, we see Foster's octopus friend swim like a fish, walk like a dog, and play games like a kid. She changes colors. When she loses an arm in a shark attack, we watch it grow back. In fact, Craig Foster's true privilege is one that God has uniquely given only his image bearers, the opportunity to just marvel at God's extravagant creativity and the fact that he lets us live in a world like this. Now, the other lesson in My Octopus Teacher comes from Foster's attempt to explain his obsession with this octopus. I just wanted to know her, he says. I just wondered what would happen if I went to the same spot every day for a year. The obsession seems strange, to be sure, but it's kind of a poignant picture of a person looking for something outside of himself. Especially in this culture where almost every voice tells you to only look inside to find yourself. Think about it. What if we approached God in this way? What if we became so obsessed with knowing Him, we spent our time and our energy essentially stalking Him every day through reading the Bible, prayer, and serving others? And what if we came to God with the same sense of expectation that Foster had? He was painfully deliberate not to impose himself in the octopus's life. He wanted to know her, but he knew that she had to decide to reveal herself to him. Now, the good news is we know God wants us to know Him. After all, consider the incredible lengths He has gone to in order to make Himself known in His Word, in His world, especially through His Son. My Octopus Teacher is a strange movie, but Foster's film gives a fascinating portrayal of the God-shaped hole that's in every human heart. To become obsessed with God, to follow him around like he's the answer for our problems, to wait for him to show himself to us, that's the only way for our hearts to be filled and at rest. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
20 minutes past the hour, the weekend is here.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast in a very active weather pattern, incorporating breathtaking cold and storms tracking from coast to coast. We've got a very busy weather pattern ahead, tracking three systems, one coming in this weekend and two next week. The two next week look potent. The one this weekend looks meek, but still enough to produce some accumulating snow. But in the meantime, for this afternoon, a little sunshine at times in central and eastern Pennsylvania particularly. Otherwise, clouds prevail with flurries. Lake snow with a few inches of fluff along the south shore of Lake Ontario from Rochester west through Niagara. The temperatures peaking this afternoon, upper teens to mid-20s. Some clouds and a flurry tonight. Lake snow near Lake Ontario down towards zero in spots. Then for tomorrow, cloudy. Snow arrives late. Snow tomorrow night. Light accumulations by Sunday morning. The high Sunday in the 20s, and President's Day looks cloudy with a chance of some snow.
All right, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues. At the state capitals, they are Jason McGuire of New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Michael Geer at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Solving the world's problems in 10 minutes or less. Here we go. And Jason, we will begin with you. It has been 2 weeks now since that scathing AG report on COVID nursing home deaths in New York. Where do things stand with this story today?
Well, the Cuomo administration has little by little been leaking out the numbers, which is beginning to give us a bigger picture of what actually happened in the nursing homes. It appears that the deaths are now over 15,000 of those nursing home deaths related to COVID-19. And with that number, now we know why the Cuomo administration did not want that number to drop all at one time. So that's something the legislature is starting to take action on. Bills are beginning to move. Scrutiny is beginning to happen. And frankly, Governor Andrew Cuomo and his health commissioner are on the hot seat.
Yeah, realistically, is the Biden Justice Department going to look into this?
No, I don't believe that the Justice Department is going to look into this. I think that there's enough of a friendship and a kinship there between the current White House and the Cuomo administration. That's not going to happen. But the public of court opinion is still out there, and frankly, people are very concerned.
All right. Well, let's head to Harrisburg by way of Washington, D.C., Michael, in the ongoing impeachment trial of former President Trump. Your state figuring prominently in this proceeding. The lead attorney for the president hails from Montgomery County, Mr. Bruce Castor, and also your senior U.S. Senator, Pat Toomey. He is one of just a handful of Republicans who voted on the constitutionality of this trial. Many say if he votes to convict, that may hand John Fetterman a win in that Senate seat. What do you think of that?
Well, I'm not sure about that. I mean, number one, Pat Toomey has said he's not going to run again. So he's, in some measure, although he has 2 years left in his term, a lame duck. And so he isn't tethered to sort of what he thinks public opinion is related to that issue. And I don't know that his vote either way makes much of a difference in what happens in that Senate election. I will point out that Senator Casey, the Democrat incumbent here in Pennsylvania, U.S. Senator, has said, related to his impeachment vote, that no one is above the law. And that reminded me when I saw that quote from Casey about John Fetterman, who thinks he is above the law in hanging those flags, the rainbow flag and the marijuana flag, on the balcony of his office at the state capitol. That is clearly against the law, a law signed by Governor Wolf, and yet Fetterman says he's not going to obey that law, and he's going to keep putting those flags there, even as state workers take them down.
All right. We'll see how that contest plays out in the months to come. Big news in New York this week. The governor, of course, opening up sports stadiums, large-scale sporting events for fans. No more cardboard cutouts. But when it comes churches in New York. There's been some litigation on that front. Jason, explain what happened this week.
Yeah, Bob, there was a court ruling this week in which a federal district judge actually ruled against Governor Cuomo's restrictions with in regard to the percentages. Some places in New York State had the 25 and 33% percentage still in their cluster zones. Those are no more. The orange and red houses of worship restrictions are gone. But our analysis of this is that churches are still at 50% capacity across the state. So there are still restrictions, but the most restrictive of them are no longer here.
All right. We saw the U.S. Supreme Court weighed in on this.
Passes a resolution to extend it. One would allow the legislature to pass a resolution without the governor's signature to extend or terminate an emergency declaration by the governor. And that is all, again, to rein in the governor's power, which he's been wielding it without any limitations since March of last year when he imposed the COVID restrictions. I think it's likely to pass. I think, number one, there's just an appetite for restricting, limiting the governor in the state. And number two, just the track record of since 1995, there have been 10 amendments going on the ballot, and all 10 have passed. Last time one did not pass in Pennsylvania was 1981.
Wow. I'm not the sharpest crayon in the box, Jason, but just for the life of me, when it comes to the vaccine supply-demand issue, why doesn't New York just set up a glorified sign-up sheet, a pre-registration process where folks get in line, get the shot? Why does the governor continually make more people eligible when there's a supply shortage to begin with?
Bob, you clearly make too much common sense to serve in government.
I just don't know.
You know, what we see happening is the federal government is loosening the restrictions, the regulations regarding who is eligible. And so the state, trying to align itself with what is happening at the federal government because it doesn't want to fall behind, is essentially opening it up to more and more people. But we don't yet have enough vaccine supply to meet the initial regulations that are out there. And so it is becoming problematic, very confusing for people. There was an entrepreneur who created a new website that would help schedule these things for the cost of $50. And that is what private enterprise can do as opposed to what public government has been able to accomplish in this regard.
Oh, well, hey, I'm glad I'm not the only one that wondered that. Michael, the governor also making headlines this week with his pitch for a minimum wage increase. Not sure what the Pennsylvania Family Institute position on this is, but he continually talks about, you know, it's hard for families to make it on a minimum wage these days. I wonder, was the minimum wage even created to support families? I always thought it was something, you know, a college kid did to put gas in his car so he could go out on a Friday night. Talk to that if you would.
No, I think you're right. And the minimum wage, when people think about the jobs that teens and young people take, oftentimes are not designed to sustain a family at all, but to help, you know, a corner grocer or deli owner or something like that have some relief for themselves so that they can have some opportunity to give jobs to other people. When you think the impact of the minimum wage and low wage jobs being taken away when the minimum wage is raised, it can be seen at grocery stores. When you go and see those self-serve kiosks and the scan it yourself, those are jobs that used to be held by teenagers. And if you increase the minimum wage, those jobs and opportunities go away even further.
Yeah, and you also run the risk of the very people you're trying to help, you're hurting because the employers are just going to lay those jobs off anyway, right, if they go at the rate that the governor wants to. Adult use marijuana is a huge topic in New York State. We've seen some sheriffs come out this week saying, hold on a minute here. Is it running into some turbulence, Jason? What's the latest here on this effort to push pot in New York?
Yeah, this seems to be the story every year in recent years, is the narrative begins the legislative session or the calendar here by talking about how pot is going to pass, it's inevitable, there's no way to stop it. And then as you begin to get into the weeds, there are things that trip it up, and it always goes back to money. Right now, there are two competing proposals, the governor's and the legislative proposals. The governor's proposal basically wants to keep the revenue to use it as he sees fit. The legislative proposal wants to return the funds that come from the marijuana sales, the taxation, back to the urban communities to spend as they see fit. That's one of the chief differences. The other is whether or not we're going to allow current drug dealers to actually get into this program and continue as future drug dealers. And so there's two major hurdles that the legislature and the governor administration is going to have to overcome if we're going to see recreational weed in this state. Certainly, we hope not. We're working to block it every chance we have.
Yeah, and our last year, the state's largest school district was supposed to reopen this week, but the powerful teachers unions had other ideas. Michael, why such a resistance from the powerful teachers unions to get kids back into the classroom?
Well, it follows just what Jason just said, which is it all comes down to money. The teachers unions, whether in Philadelphia, Chicago, or elsewhere, see this as an opportunity to squeeze the government and the taxpayer for more money. And that's what they're basically saying. Even though billions of dollars that were already allocated from last year's COVID relief for education has not even been spent, they see this as an opportunity to extort, I would use that term, from taxpayers more money. This despite 14 nonprofit organizations in Philadelphia that work and deal with children saying the schools should open. They see children are languishing or hurting, families are hurting, and yet the teachers union is blocking this relief for families.
All right, and that will have to be the last word this week, but if you want more information about the great work going on at New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms, Jason, where can folks check you out?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
Stay informed on the issues as well in Pennsylvania. Michael Gear, what's your site, sir?
PAFamily.org.
Guys, great show as always. It's called Capital Connection. Comes your way Fridays during the noon report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast in a very active weather pattern, incorporating breathtaking cold and storms tracking from coast to coast. We've got a very busy weather pattern ahead, tracking three systems, one coming in this weekend and two next week. The two next week look potent. The one this weekend looks meek, but still enough to produce some accumulating snow. But in the meantime, for this afternoon, a little sunshine at times and central and eastern Pennsylvania particularly. Otherwise, clouds prevail with flurries. Lake snow with a few inches of fluff along the south shore of Lake Ontario from Rochester west through Niagara. The temperatures peaking this afternoon, upper teens to mid-20s. Some clouds and a flurry tonight. Lake snow near Lake Ontario down towards zero in spots. Then for tomorrow, cloudy. Snow arrives late. Snow tomorrow night. Light accumulations by Sunday morning. The high Sunday in the 20s. And President's Day looks cloudy with a chance of some snow.
All right, Kevin Williams, have yourself a fantastic weekend. Finally, this Friday, just in time for Abraham Lincoln's birthday today, a New Jersey man has created a unique tribute to the nation's 16th president. Here's reporter Alisa Z.
Robert Schott built a 14-foot-tall Lincoln Memorial sculpture in his front yard, made entirely of snow. To complete the project, Schott needed 6 tons of the white stuff, 8 volunteers, and 60 hours of work. Schott builds a new sculpture every year the state is hit with a big storm. Now, this means, he says, that the pressure mounts each year to do something bigger and better.
It is impressive. Check it out if you can. Thank you, Alisa. That's Alisa Z reporting. And that is the world we live in this Friday. As always, thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. I'm Bill Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.